Your mom had an accident. I'll take you to her. Uh-oh.
Look, Wild Bill!
Who was that?
Some stranger. He said Donnie's mom was hurt. I didn't know if I should go with him.
Well, just don't do what a stranger says. Check it out with an adult you know. Remember, a stranger
can mean danger. Now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another fantastic, glorious episode of Nerd with Dre and Jeff. I am Jeff, and you are Dre, right?
I think so. It's hard to tell because we have another person here today, Jeff.
We do.
I don't know if I'm Dre or if they're Dre. Have we discussed this?
It's very upsetting. Adam Dre Brown is here with us, Jeff, folks.
My name's Jeff Dre.
No!
Jeff Dre Malvarez is
you
my
I love
name.
It.
Adam is, introduce yourself, Adam. I'm not going to tell people who you are. It's not my job.
My name is Adam Todd Brown, and I was the first podcaster, I think. I'm not way into podcasts, so I don't know for sure, but it feels like I was the first.
I'm gonna nerd out here a little bit because I'm a huge, of course, unpopular opinion. You don't even like this show. You don't even like this network. Should have worn the shirt today, Adam. I forgot. All right. Anyway.
Wow.
But for those that do not know Adam Todd Brown and are here, I am baffled. Huge, huge guest. We're going to be talking G.I. Joe. And what I will say is I've listened to so much of your stuff. I think you mentioned you had an internet radio show back in the day when before they were called podcasts. So
I did. It was before iTunes existed. So yeah, I was doing it through DB Power Amp or some shit. Winamp. Who knows?
We're like,
oh, Winamp. Holy cow.
Now, we are starting seasons. Is this season seven?
Season seven.
Season seven of our season of Nerd. This season is going to be on toy reboots. That's right. We're taking toy lines that were popular, then fell apart, and then got rebooted and re-put out to a new generation. We are starting this with one of my and Adam Todd Brown and maybe Dre's favorite toy lines of the 80s, G.I. Joe, a real American hero. Also my name.
American hero was always way more into the villains, but yes, real American.
That's going to be fascinating to hear about the villain tie-in for both of you. Something I like doing on this show, which I know Jeff is just a fan of, is going behind the curtain. And going into the toy season. So last season, I just broke Jeff's brain, making him watch terrible movie after terrible movie.
Adam, he made me watch Double Dragon.
It's the best.
I will say that we do have a tie-in, though. This episode has a direct tie-in to last season.
That's awesome. So maybe one of the few bright spots on last season, which we'll get when we get there. But, for this season, we decided to go away from movies. We've done a few seasons on that. We're nerd. We do all sorts of nerdy stuff. We went for G.I. Joe. When it comes to guests, we're not normally a guest show, but usually where we'll bring someone in is when one of the hosts, me, because Jeff's the ultimate nerd, doesn't know the subject. So when it comes to G.I. Joe, this is one that kind of skipped me. I was around in that era, and we've even kind of popularized a weird nerd side where Jeff said he's a G.I. Joe fan, and he said they're G.I. Joe fans and Lego fans, and I will say I was on the Lego side of the kidneys.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that was a thing, but I would fall on the G.I. Joe side.
So it's not necessarily that, but what it tends to be, and this is not for everybody, but I've noticed this in a lot of families, especially families with two sons or whatever. There are the organic style toys, like action figures, your He-Mans, your G.I. Joes, etc. And then there are your technical side, your whatever, your carbon or whatever, silicon-based stuff, your Legos, your Transformers, you're much more angular and much more use your creativity to build a thing or whatever. I was not that. I was the G.I. Joe He-Man, give me a muscly dude with perhaps an action feature, which Adam loves, muscly dudes with action features.
Right.
And so, and I was that. I very much was the meaty plastic men fan.
Yeah, I was too. I put together one Lego set that my parents bought me, and I was like, come on, mom, not made a free time here. Give me something else.
Do you remember what the set was? What was it?
Boring.
Yeah. It's probably worth $1,000 now, right?
Yeah, hard work. is what it was. And that wasn't what I was looking for in toys.
I never understood. I mean, and I get it. Like, Lego's insanely popular, but I'll never understand when somebody's like, here's a bunch of bricks, figure it out. And I'm like, I didn't ask for an assignment for Christmas. So
it's training for future IKEA. It's like, you know, why not?
It is training for like really like shitty, like industrial gigs.
Yeah.
You're like, did you create something interesting or did you just build it the way the instructions did? Because that's whether you're a designer or whether you're working on the assembly.
You can do both, Jeff. You can make your own creations with Lego as well.
I ain't making shit, dude. I ain't making shit with Legos.
IKEA is about as big as I'll go building my own, like putting my own furniture and stuff together. Once it gets bigger than that, I feel like I'm doing my own stunts a little bit. And that's just robbing a stuntman of a job. Yeah. So, yeah, if I have something big to put together, I'm task rabbit and that shit.
And have some Tom Cruise show up and do his own stunts for you.
Well, I guess what I was going to say about like why you're such a great guest for the show, Adam, I mean, we would have had you on for anything. Like, candidly, you're that cool. You're that awesome. Love having you on the show. Honestly,
Thank you.
Kind of backdoored into this because you had me as a guest on You Don't Even Like Sports Live, which was a delight. My Wednesdays tend to be full, so I can't even watch it live, but I did have time that Wednesday. And on that, you were like, oh, you have guests on your show. I'm like, well, not really, but since you're offering, which is how I took it, and you agreed, and we wanted something specific to you. And you have actually brought up G.I. Joes with Jeff, you know, for fans of yours for years, several times, and you have some fun stories that I'm sure we'll get into. Pre-show, we were even talking, like, you Pokemoned G.I. Joe at one point in your childhood, and then unlike the rest of us, Marks, realized the grift, and it is a grift, very quickly and backed out.
Yeah. I think I'm going to learn on this episode exactly which G.I. Joes I had. I think it was the 1983 series, but I had them all. It was a struggle to get them. My dad put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it, going out to stores looking for individual G.I. Joes while I was at school. And we got them all. And I think it was maybe 10 days later, I got a flyer. And they were like, five new G.I. Joes. And I was like, no, there's not. No, there's not.
Not for me.
Yeah, I give up. I'm done.
Yeah. And
even at that age, I was like, oh, come on. More?
Which is wild because I'm the other way where I'm like, oh, my God, new guys.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found out in my research. So this is how, like, differently we are in this world, which is why I'm actually really glad we have you here, Adam. Is because, like, as I was looking up, like, the years of the subsets, I was realizing I was playing with G.I. Joes thicker into it than I should have been. Like, there, I was looking at, like, subsets from, like, 93, where I would have been, like, 11 and 12. And I was like, yeah, I had a lot of these guys. Jesus.
That seems fine. 11's not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad, especially if you were collecting them. It's not, like, if you were still, like, in the backyard playing war with them, then that's weird.
At 11?
No, I was still like, my brother and I would set up like, we would set up like big diorama battles of what it would look like and stuff. Like,
I was selling Coke by 12. You kidding me? I'm joking.
No. He's not. He's telling the truth, everybody. But like, as I was going through, I was like, man, I lasted, like I outlasted. And that's actually something very interesting about the A Real American Hero line. Is that this has a much longer shelf life than most toy lines do, because toy lines tend to disappear after about 6 years. Like 6 years or so is like the main strength of a toy line, because you market it to a young group of children, they buy it, and then they eventually age out of it.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. It happens with any seminal thing, Masters of the Universe, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And then it'll get like rebooted, thrown back on TV. They'll, you know, a line might limp along. G.I. Joe lasted about 12 years of its initial run, which is like rare. So that is really interesting to know. And so when we look at it, there are a couple of sources that can do the history part of this a little bit better than, you know, we'd be wasting your time to just repeat what the toys that made us teaches about the background. So we're going to do a quick brief history of it, but it's going to be really brief.
And those two shout outs, by the way, I would definitely say Toys That Made Us. Those are like 45 minute mini documentaries, kind of like ESPN 30 for 30s.
Yeah.
Those
are real little guy on Netflix.
Yeah. And then, of course, you can do Secret Galaxy. We're big fans. You can go check out an interview with Dan Larson of Secret Galaxy on this very network. Jeff has cool friends. Those are great, too. So, yeah, to Jeff's point, we'll do a cursory one. But if you're like, I need more, there you go.
Yeah, there, Secret Galaxy has a bunch of different versions of, like, histories of different parts. Very entertaining and informational. It's very neat. But I'm going to give you guys just a real quick history of G.I. Joe leading up to that. Is essentially 1964, G.I. Joe hits the market through Hasbro. It is a 12-inch doll, no action figure.
Lame.
They changed.
Sorry to immediately jump in, but I do think that's absolutely wild that that is like the origin of that schism, right? So action figure originated from G.I. Joe in the 60s, where they said, we can't call it a doll, but we want to sell dolls to boys, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, how do we sell a doll to a boy without his dad calling him gay? Like that, you hate to like put it that bluntly, but they're like, we need a way for boys to want to buy dolls. Call it an action figure. And that has been like there's a running joke throughout all of pop culture where somebody's like, nice doll. And they're like, it's an action figure. Like, there's so many television shows and movies where that's happened. I think, you know, 40-Year-Old Virgin, I think they do that bit in there as well. So in 1965, it hits the UK under the name Action Man because an American military guy who, you know, what do they care? They're like, oh, great, imperialists like us. Cool.
We want them to.
Yeah, you'll do what we say, Britain. Yeah.
Send G.I. Joe over there for real.
The 1812 coming in hot at you.
Nerds.
Action Blank will be the European version of G.I. Joe. It will be known as Action Force in the UK and its colonies, most famously India, where the toy run ran very long. In 1974, Mattel releases Heroes in Action. Mattel did not make G.I. Joe. Hasbro does. Heroes in Action is the first 3 3/4-inch scale toy in the USA, and a lot of companies like Ertl, et cetera, would follow through. Much cheaper to produce. Here we go.
That's fascinating to find out, because I was thinking Kenner was the first with that, but it was Mattel. Cool.
Yep. Mattel got it in first. 1976 is where it becomes fucking real, because OPEC's oil embargo destroys companies that are making larger toys. Without oil, you don't have plastic. I mean, that's the easiest way to put it. If you want to know why sometimes toys explode in price, it's usually an oil embargo. So this is going to be the line where toys are now going to be shrunk down to the stuff that the three of us grew up with. You know, like,
yeah,
I don't think Adam or Dre, either of us, ever really walked around with like a 12-inch toy that they were playing with.
That would have been wild. I'm actually curious, Adam, because like this is a fun age. Like Jeff and I are a year off, which on its own is kind of funny, like just watching the difference that year makes. You're only a little older, not much, Adam, but I'm very curious to see like the three, I'll spoil the season. The three episodes are going to be G.I. Joe, Star Wars, and He-Man. And I'm curious, did you like get into the Star Wars toys or the He-Man toys?
I thought you were going to ask which one I preferred. I mean, I was a kid. Yeah, I loved And my dad was a collector. And so when I would get into this stuff, he would get into it also.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah. And like the thing my dad collected the most was hat pins. He would have hats just covered with hat pins. He had thousands of them. It was weird. But like kind of like your backpack with all the
like buttons and stuff on all over. That's awesome.
He would do that with pins on his hats. And so he was just like, he was a gamer. Like it, cause I was, you know, old enough that when Atari came out, like we were on it. And I would get up in the morning. My dad would be playing Frogger since like 6 a.m. before I go to school. So I was into all of it. Star Wars, He-Man. I think G.I. Joe is definitely my favorite because it's the one I went the hardest trying to get all of them.
Yeah.
But He-Man was up there too. I liked He-Man because He-Man's name was Adam. Come on.
Yeah, I don't want to impugn your honor, Adam, but I've discovered this trick with my kid, and it's like making your parent a mark, because my kids learned that too, where it's like, if I get into the stuff if I get interested in stuff my dad's interested in, and then we go to the store and he's like, can we get that, you know, Evil Inn toy? Spoiler for a future one. I'm like, maybe. I'm like, we shouldn't, but you know, we could, but we shouldn't, but we could. So
my dad was way into all of it. That's great.
That's how you end up nowadays spending $100 on a box of like Topps Heritage baseball cards or something like that. And you're like, this money. Like that can be dangerous.
Well, remember we did that pack breaking video, and there's a listener of the podcast whose husband owned the card store I used to go to as a kid. And that card store was in the bowling alley where my dad participated in a bowling league for years. And he would, like, if I was trying to complete a set, he would hit that card store and like regularly try to seek out cards I needed and stuff. It was great.
Yeah. It's fucking awesome. In 1977, G.I. Joe tries to shrink the toy down to about 8 inches, and it's kind of a failure. 1978 hits, and this is where, between OPEC and 1978, this is where everything goes out of control, because we have we have Star Wars toy line finally getting out there, right? Star Wars categorically changed the entire toy world. It's where we start getting phrases like toyetic being brought out. It's where we start getting things like, you know, the toys are now this size, right? Like toys aren't big anymore. They're small. And if you want to know why, the most popular toy in the world is this size. So now everyone's out there and they're trying to figure out what to do. Hasbro has been left in the lurch. Hasbro did not, passed on Star Wars just like Mattel did. It's this whole ass thing. 1980, Ronald Reagan comes and says, what if we poison your children with advertising? And they were like, hell yeah.
I know we're going to have Adam talk Reagan on this show, because it is really weird how that oil embargo in the 70s changed so much, because one of the biggest drivers in presidential elections is just like people's confidence in the economy. So OPEC happens. Everybody's paying so much for gas. Screw the Democrat. There's also lots of great podcast episodes you've done, Adam, about the weirdness of that election, which I would definitely listen to, with Reagan and all that. That is, there's so much stuff, conspiracy, the show, it's all over the You Don't Even Like This Network.
It's actually the next episode of Conspiracy, the show, is about the October surprise, which is the theory that the Reagan campaign negotiated with Iran to keep the hostages until after the election, so Carter couldn't get like a political win by getting them freed. People don't realize those hostages were released 5 minutes after Reagan was inaugurated.
Holy cow.
Exactly 5 minutes.
Yeah, I really appreciate you, Adam. And I know I keep cutting you off, Jeff. I'm sorry. I will make sure I let you talk.
No, it's fine. You cut Jeff off.
Yeah.
But I was just going to say, I really appreciate you, Adam, like timing your podcast to promote Nerdmore. That is just so awesome, because you were like, you're going to talk Reagan. Yeah. We got to talk some Reagan. but okay. So OPEC, in part, economic woes, people freak out. That in part helps lead to Reagan's election. There's all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
In combination, that leads to toys being smaller. And then Reagan, and you're going to get to that in a second, Jeff, does a bunch. So it is wild how like that one thing changes U.S. politics forever. And you've argued Reagan is the worst president and changed the country for the worst, as well as completely changing the toy market, which is amazing.
It's funny with that, because what happened with when Reagan came in and they deregulated a lot of the stuff with the FCC, basically Hot Wheels in 1967, I believe, ruined it for everybody, where they put a cartoon out that was clearly just an advertisement for Hot Wheels. And the FCC stepped in and was like, absolutely not. You cannot do this. You cannot just market a toy as entertainment. And then in 1981, when Reagan comes in, that man loved allowing big businesses to do whatever they wanted to whomever they wanted. And they're like, all right, you can do that now. You just have to have like a good message at the end. So if you guys are wondering where the unknowing and half the battle came up, That was the compromise that was created. Same thing with He-Man at the end. You know, Orko had a lot going on today, but what isn't great is getting diddled by a parent or whatever shit they would have.
That episode.
We all do, right? So it's very fascinating to me. And I love when people are like, I don't really do politics. And it's like, well, politics does you. And more than you could possibly fathom, realize, or understand. You know, complaining about why everything's more expensive while saying you don't care about politics. Cool. But so basically, this is where it really comes in. 1980-81. Everybody's chasing Kenner, who was like garbage. Hasbro was famous for what? Like Mr. Potato Head at the time. Like that was what they had or whatever. They show up. They're going to reboot G.I. Joe. They come together with this whole package because Hasbro's like, I don't know. And they basically team up with Marvel. And this is going to create a triad three-point attack method of marketing to children. Number one, you have your concept, which is we need to sell these toys. And this is interesting for everybody paying attention about like cinematic box office stuff. It's all designed to sell toys. Like even if you're like, you know, like Toy Story, they haven't been getting better. It's like, yeah, they're still selling billions of dollars.
I would say the biggest one to that example, Jeff, that everybody tries to bash Pixar for is Cars. Everybody's like, Cars was so terrible and such a departure for, because that was like their first failure in terms of not being a great movie. Cars 3, which just ripped off the plot of Rocky 3, amazing movie. But that being said, everybody bashes Cars. And I worked Target at the time, and it's just like, oh my, do you realize how many toys they got out of that movie? They won.
Adults screaming into the wind about toy commercials is one of my favorite things to laugh at. Because and it happens a lot, and we can come back to that, but whenever they reboot a franchise or they bring a franchise back, and all these adults complain that it's not as good as they were when they were kids, and then you look back at what it was when you were kids, it's like, man, you're so poisoned by the nostalgia of thinking that the thing you watched was great because you were young.
Yeah, every toy is better now. Everything. Sure, yeah. Everything kids have is better now.
Absolutely. Now, so they have their three-prong attack. They have the toy. They need to find a way to market the toy, but you can't market toys in a certain way in advertising, but there are no rules about books. So they're like, we're going to do a comic book. Marvel is like, yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, we're going to find out that the sort of the technical creator of G.I. Joe and its characters is a gentleman by the name of Larry Hama. Larry Hama is a very well-known and well-respected comic book writer who has worked in toy properties in the past, who had just pitched a failed Nick Fury reboot that was going to basically be G.I. Joe. And Marvel's like, no, thanks. This isn't what we want. He literally just reskinned that idea and it became G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. Like, it's literally G.I. Joe was a Nick Fury title that got scrapped. They decided not to do it, and I gotta ask this
because I was maybe a little young. I definitely know the cartoon, and I have a few vivid memories of the cartoon. But Adam, were you into the comic book at all?
The comic book, no. That's one thing as a kid that I didn't get really hard into. Like, I remember getting into X-Men and really liking Wolverine, and then expecting Wolverine was going to be in every issue, and he was not. And I was like, fuck this. Done. So I never, like, comic books never really caught on with me. Cartoons, yes, but comic books, not really.
And I'll circle back to tell you guys that the first comic book I ever owned that was mine was G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number 51. And when I won the game show, the first like frivolous little splurge I did was to get a graded 9.8 G.I. Joe number 51. Cause I read mine to crap and it dissolved basically. So there I was right there. The follow-up to that was to do a cartoon, and deregulation had that. So you have comic book, cartoon, and toy, package them together, shoot them out into the world. They come up with this idea in 1980. They get pushed back. So they're not going to see to a 1982 release. This gives Larry Hama time to flesh out the characters even more, give them backstories, deep, rich backstories that eventually became the file cards on the back. If you remember those little file cards that you could cut out, those only exist because they delayed it a year and it gave him time to play around with their backstories.
But yeah, that was copying Kenner too, right?
Hmm?
I believe that was like they basically saw what Kenner was doing with Star Wars and were like, can we do it better with G.I. Joe?
And Star Wars had file cards on the back? I don't recall that being a thing.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, I don't think they had.
I don't think they did. They certainly copied the size. Like, they're all copying Kenner's plan. Now, whether or not they did that, because the file cards are an accident that became a major part of the G.I. Joe toy line. People would cut them out the back along with their flag points. So they could, which are the Marlboro Miles of 80s children.
I at one point lived in Wisconsin and moved to South Dakota, and my mom lived in Wisconsin. And because I was leaving the state, she put this photo book together with like a bunch of pictures from my childhood and stuff. Aww. And one of the things in there was an angry letter I sent because I had sent flag points to get this G.I. Joe like mail-in thing called the Manta. And I felt like it was taking too long. So I wrote this very angry letter in crayon and gave it to my mom to demand that she send it out. And that Manta came a week later. And I was like, you're damn right. My mom never sent that letter. Yep.
The Manta is a tiny little skiff.
Yeah. Yeah.
A tiny little skiff.
Yeah. Even when it came, I was like, well, this wasn't worth a letter. Jeez.
It wasn't worth my time. I could have put some Legos together instead of this crayon time.
Did you follow it up with a follow-up letter to apologize? That would have been like, that'd be even funnier. She has another crayon letter.
I defected to Russia.
That would have been so funny if Hasbro sent a letter back in crayon. That's just like, fuck you, Adam. Fuck you.
I would have kept that.
So 1982, we have our first release. This first release is going to last until 1994. So that's going to be our history that we have, just a very brief history of that. And then we're going to talk really about just like the toy line itself, which 3¾-inch multi-jointed. Remember, Star Wars only had 5 joints. They had legs, hip, shoulder, and neck joints, right? So they didn't bend. G.I. Joe had a elastic that would hold together a hip joint. Right. It would hold together, not in a hip joint, but the waist itself. So it had a movable waist. It also had hip joints so you could move the thighs. It had knees so you could bend them and put them into different poses. They also had a similar thing with the shoulder, elbows, and the heads were more often than not a ball joint. So you could swivel the heads and angle them, which is a huge step up from the absolute dog shit Star Wars was putting out.
Yeah.
And I remember this was what's funny. Because like I said, this is one of the reasons I wanted you on to guest was for this story, Adam. So I don't want to steal it from you. I'll let you tell it. But I found it was amusing because you basically said you had a G.I. Joe toy and you knew like the intricacies. You Legoed it because you broke it at one point and put it back together and then did a very kid thing with it, which I found amusing.
I snuck it into class with me. I would have been in like second or third grade. And I looked it up. I think the character's name, I think it was Stalker. I think it might have been Stalker.
Yeah.
It was definitely a black character.
Black guy in, I'm guessing, camo fatigues.
Yeah.
That's Stalker.
And I brought it to class with me because I just got it. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to play with this while my teacher babbles. And I had like taken it apart previously and put it back together. And I'm messing with it. And I did this thing where I like super duper twisted him at the torso, like he'd been like hit by a subway train and he could still talk, but once you back it out, he's his
words are gonna fall real out. Signs energy there.
And that unraveled, and I would do that sometimes. I would like helicopter him, and I did that when I was in class, and it fucking exploded all over the floor, like
casualties of war. He got hit by a classroom mortar.
Yeah, it was there was G.I. Joe shrapnel everywhere. And I never saw that G.I. Joe again.
So I was the younger brother. And for some reason, And it did eventually kind of switch a little bit, but I was kind of stuck being Cobra all the time because my brothers wanted to be the good guys. So I got stuck being the bad guys. The thing is the bad guys looked so much cooler. Like all the good guys were just like, here's an average man's face.
Yeah.
Wearing a green shirt. And Cobra, they're just like, here is an evil ninja. And this guy is a saboteur terrorist.
Cobra Commander and Destro are two of the coolest action figures I've ever seen. I loved those were two of my favorites.
Yeah.
Destro, and he was an arms dealer.
Destro was an arms dealer with a metal face, with a mask that he would wear.
And a metal head.
It was so badass. Yeah. It was so fun. Like, you know, because, yeah, it is. You do definitely. He has the energy of like, and I know they say, you know, that it's a mask and they did a whole bunch of stuff with that. But they animated it to make it look like his fucking head.
Well, the action figure, too, though.
Yeah.
His whole head was silver like that.
Oh, yeah. And there was eventually another one that he did gold. Which we're going to get to after you left, because Adam left around 1983, 84.
Yeah.
So here's the if we're doing some digging. So it comes out in 82, which does have a Stalker character in it. But in 1983, and maybe you know better than me, Jeff, they release series 1.5. And I'm going at yojo.com, yojoe.com. Yeah. So in 1983, there's a 1.5.
J-O.
This is not an audio. This is not a visual medium. So you all get to miss the Adam doing beautiful signs that go along with G.I. Joe, spell it out. All right, that was terrible.
More like J.O. Joe.
Yeah, that was, see there, Jeff got the joke, which is mean. So Adam made the joke.
The G.I. joke.
Yep. And then Jeff's going to be on the air and Adam's is going to get edited out with the dead air. Sorry, Adam, world's not fair. But with that being said, so essentially in 1983, they really re-released series 1.5. I'm guessing it was just a re-release, Jeff. Looks like Adam would have caught up with that. Then they release a series 2, which does have Deathstro. So essentially it looks, Adam, like you got in 1983, and that would have been pretty good for a kid, because the first series is 16. That's not untenable. Yeah. And then with the second series, it looks like you're adding another 16, so 32. Yeah. So you collect 32 characters.
You actually are reminding me about the articulation error that I made where I said they have more. I forgot to mention the swivel arm. The original run of 1982, they had what were called the straight arms. So it was the way I described it. But eventually they created the swivel arm, meaning that there was a part around mid-bicep where you could literally turn the arm. So instead of holding a gun just forward, you could literally turn their arm to make them shoot at you.
Has the term Kung Fu battle grip fallen out of favor? Because that's what we called it when I was a kid.
You know, Kung Fu grip has been one of those like inside jokes that has existed. I mean, I remember it being in like a Sublime song.
Yeah,
the biggest one I remember was Trading Spaces, is when Eddie Murphy character, when he's going on like one of his monologues, is like, I'm not going to have money to buy my kid the G.I. Joe with a Kung Fu grip. So he says that, and that's mid-80s.
Yeah, that might be where I heard it. But I know as a kid, that's what we called that feature, was Kung Fu Battle.
No, that's what it was. They marketed it as that, like it legitimately was. Or I don't know if it was called that originally, but they basically gave it a hand that could move, and then it got referred to as Kung Fu grip, and it like, caught
that's
on.
The 12-inch Joe. He had Kung Fu grip. Yeah, he had Kung Fu.
I remember, because I remember thinking, like, what did kids do before this? Like, just straight up and down arm? Come on. It's gross.
Hell yeah. So, like, the toys that, Adam, you would have had would have been, like, Airborne, Destro, Doc, Gung-Ho, Major Blood, Snowjob, Torpedo, Tripwire, Breaker, Cobra Trooper, Cobra Commander, Cobra Officer, Flash Grunt, Rock and Roll, Scarlet, Short Fuse, Snake Eyes, Stalker, and Zap.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Can I ask a question, Jeff, for the audio listeners?
Yeah.
The website we have is great, but the issue it has is it's a visual medium. It's not for geeks like me that like flat files, which is text.
Mm-hmm.
Did you list those just off of site, or do you actually have the actual words printed out somewhere?
No, I read them off of the Yojo, because Yojo is a great, Yojo has been the G.I. Joe collector website for as long as I can ever recall. Like, since the internet existed, yojo.com has been pretty big. So I used it for a little bit of research as well. So when you were like, I'm going to check out on yojo.com, I'm like, I'm already there.
Okay. So, and actually, because the listeners need to learn how to interact with yojo.com, if you click at the top where it says buy year, there is a drop down that will show the text. If you don't have it, good design, they just show the figure pictures.
Mm-hmm. It's really good for like, they use it at like Blast from the Past a lot when they're trying to find out like what weapons go with what characters, because there's, you know, so many little weapons came with stuff. A lot of stuff happened to these toys. For some reason, like my thumbs would always break off my G.I. Joes, because I would try to like fit the weapons in their hands. You know, I would always like try to like squeeze the thumb to give a tighter grip on like the machine gun or whatever they were holding. And I used to break the thumbs off those fuckers all the time. Like all the time. Adam, so you left around 1984.
Yeah, that's when 1984 is when I started playing baseball. And then I was like all sports after that. Me and my dad actually found a guy and sold my G.I. Joes for not an insignificant amount of money. Because I didn't have just the figures. Like, I had all the like mail-in stuff.
You had the vehicles and...
Yeah. And I think we sold them for like $300, which... Yeah. At the time was like, that was crazy.
Yeah, the Hiss, the Viper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I had the Hiss. Which means you just missed, because series 3 is where they started getting like into the really interesting stuff, where you got like Storm Shadow was in series 3 in 1984. You could mail away for the Hooded Cobra Commander. You could get that Zartan skiff speeder.
I did have the Hooded Cobra Commander, so I stayed on for part of 3 then, apparently,
because yeah.
I
mailed in
that Hooded Cobra Commander.
Junkyard and Mutt, Firefly, who's like the sabotage terrorist, the Baroness was in that one. Spirit was there. They went a little bit.
Did I have series 3 too?
You might have.
Yeah, it sounds like. I might have, yeah.
Because so now, like, there's a lot of stuff that comes in when, like, once you have Zartan, we start coming up with, like, subsets. And subsets are a very interesting way for companies to rebrand a character or an actual mold. Like, this is a very common thing. Well, they do palette swaps, meaning they'll change the colors. They'll reuse different parts of the body. If they're like, oh, well, we got a Snake Eyes, but we could also make a Snake Eyes that's like a, you know, that has this action feature, but we can use most of the same molding and stuff like that. So you really kind of like missed out on the weird subsets that we're going to get into in a little bit, because there are some that are wild. And as you see the toy line progressing, moving the years, and then like clearly falling backwards in sales, you can actually see the utter desperation in the stuff that they're trying to get done.
I wonder if the subsets are what did me in.
It could. Those came a little bit later. They started in 1987, like late 87. I feel like you probably would have been gone by then.
I was off board by then.
Well, what I can throw actually as an autopsy, as we're reverse trying to discover what happened in Adam's past. So G.I. Joe autopsy. So basically, if you look through the first 3 years, 82, 83, 84, there are under 20 figures with one mail-in that happen per set. The first two have 16. The next one, 84, has 19 with one mail-in. So it's 20. And 85, though, is when it actually explodes-ish, right? And now they have like 27 base.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they're getting them out there. Collect,
and then two mail-ins. So I think what might have happened, right, is this is a very funny thing. And tie it back to Beanie Babies, which is something Adam has talked about on shows before. Like, look it up. It's great. They're great episodes. And what happened is they had this very controlled drip of releasing Beanie Babies so that they were collectible. And then when they flood the market is when the collectors are like, screw you, we don't want to buy this many. It looks like the same thing happened on G.I. Joe, where it was like, okay, we're going to release 16 a year. And you're like, that is doable. And they're like, next year, aren't you lucky? We're going to release 30. And you were like, I see what you're doing. No, And I'm dropping the name, but he's the talking head on The Toys That Made Us. He even is just like, man, we were just stealing money from kids. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of like recalling it, just being like, oh, yeah, we just would produce more and tell the parents to sell them. And they'd come along hook, line, and sinker. So you caught the grift early.
Weirdly, I didn't care about completing. Like, I had no interest in completing a set. I only wanted guys that I thought were interesting, to the point, too, where, like, a lot of the characters that would come out, I didn't like them for very, like, superfluous reasons. Like, if I thought that their gimmicks, like Dial Tone, I didn't give a shit about Dial Tone. I'm like, this guy's a nerd. I don't want some telecoms guy with a telephone backpack. Like, that's a waste of my thing. The other part, too, is I didn't get G.I. Joe's except as presents.
Mm.
Like Christmas and my birthday. So, like, I wasn't too, like, I would go and look at stuff, but a lot of times there were characters that I just was like, no, I don't need Crystal Ball.
Yeah, I'm the exact opposite. I am 100% a completist, to the point that during, like, the iPod era, or even when we were burning CDs, I would absolutely not, like, burn a CD or put it on my iPod with the songs I didn't like deleted. I would put the shit I didn't like either, because it would drive me nuts.
Yeah,
knowing I didn't have the entire album on there. It's probably a thing.
It's called OCD. I mean, we all, like, almost everybody has some form of an obsessive compulsion, and that might be yours. Yeah. I had weird things where, like, I didn't like blonde characters in G.I. Joe, like blonde male characters. I was like, no, I'm good. So, like, I never owned a blonde male. Like, I never had Duke. I never had, like, any of those heroes that were blonde. I just was like, no, I'm good. And there's no reason for me to do that.
Those always look like the kids that made fun of me at school.
Yeah, that might be it, actually.
Yeah, like the good guy G.I. Joes, even as a kid, always had a little too much jock energy for me. Like, because here's the thing. I've been hating Reagan for a long time, long, long time, since he was in office and I was a child. And I don't know, even then I was like, Cobra Commander's going to win this someday.
He'll get it.
Feel like they're turning a corner. They're gonna win this war.
Yeah, it's gonna start to get crazy in around 1987 with all that stuff, and we're gonna get to that. But first, I want to talk about something very important, which is celebrity cameos in G.I. Joe.
Mm.
We had talked previously about William the Refrigerator Perry being a mail-in in 1986. So that is after Adam had left.
I think my dad did track one down for me. But yeah, I was definitely not avidly collecting G.I. Joe. But
they were very kind to him with the body sculpt.
One thing people forget historically about William the Refrigerator Perry, by today's standards, he wouldn't be big enough to be a lineman. Fair. He weighed like 305 pounds.
Yeah,
that's actually not big for line.
Yeah, he looks like a tank. In this one here.
Yeah, he looks like Zion Williamson in his.
He came
show.
With a football on a chain.
Yeah,
as his weapon, but also it was like the chain was straight, so it looked like a really long and weird. Two things: one, what a shitty weapon that would be. Like if you're a Cobra soldier and like a guy's just like wearing a football jersey, whipping a football into you, you're like, I can get through this.
Yeah. Also, he lives in Chicago. He needs a very specific type of weapon. Let's be honest. Chain is not going to help.
Yeah, it's not going to do much at all. It looks like a giant hammer, like a really long and weird hammer, the way the toy. I hated that. When I saw the way they did the football, and I was like, oh, that. And he probably was like, don't give me a gun. I don't want a gun. Like,
yeah,
you know, there. So he's really the first one that's like the notable one there. And then the second one is going to be Sergeant Slaughter, who had already become essentially a wrestling legend by then.
Yeah.
No, we look at it now. He started out as a mail-in. Sergeant Slaughter, by the way, two mail-in toys. He was also a mail-in for the LJN wrestling, the big rubber wrestlers, the ones that were just posed. So, he just found it. He's like the Ocean Spray Cranberry of toy lines, where he's like, you want to make me a mail-in? I'll do it. Sergeant Slaughter became insanely connected to G.I. Joe. Not only with the mail-away toy.
Yeah, I remember that. It seemed like they hired him.
They hired him to be a toy, to be a major character in the cartoon, specifically the animated movie, which we're going to talk about, which is one of the most unhinged things you'll ever see. It's the most psychedelic sci-fi Cronenberg shit you've ever seen. It is wild.
Yeah, I've seen clips and it looks like anime. It's crazy.
They fight like bug men. There's like guys wearing like karate gis, like jump kicking like giant mantis people. It is wild.
Well, part of that, when we're talking like cartoons, and I actually know Larry Hama brought this up when he was talking about the comic versus the cartoon.
Yeah.
It's the cartoon still had practices about you're not allowed to kill people. So I was like watching an intro to G.I. Joe, one of the things you sent me before the show, Jeff, and they just kill a man, but it's a robot. So you just see a guy explode and like, Jesus. And then it's like, oh, it's cool. It's a robot. It's fine. And the same thing. It's like, you've got to find, you know, things that are not human to kill, or you show them with a parachute after their jet explodes. And of course, if they're in a flimsy parachute next to a big explosion, they're going to live, right? So it's like,
yeah,
that's always funny in the cartoons. And then, yeah, Larry was saying about the comics, he's like, this is war. There should be stakes to it. But of course, commerce does not care. It's like, whatever we got to do to give this to kids, we're going to do.
Larry Hama really, because like if you read the G.I. Joe comics, some of them are like, they're insanely brutal. You're almost kind of looking to be like, I cannot believe this is the same property. Like, I think in the late, there's like a later run where like Doc, who's like the doctor, like the tan shirt, black guy, glasses, I think he gets his face blown off by a saw viper. And it is brutal. And Larry Hama, who's a writer, Vietnam vet. Not only was he a Vietnam veteran, but he was in the thick of it in a very big way. He was what they referred to back then as a tunnel rat. So he would go into the VC tunnels to like flush out and check stuff out. Here's another celebrity cameo, so to speak. Larry Hama became a character in G.I. Joe known as Tunnel Rat.
Didn't they start doing that comic-wise, right? Like, a lot of the people that worked on the property became characters, like, because they're pumping out so many figures, yep, and they need, like, some personality and look. They were just like, the guy that makes the toys, you're an action.
Yeah, who's there? And they'll, like, paint them and be like, all right, you're this guy. Famously, like, I think, like, the main visual creator ended up being, like, Leatherneck, kind of a thing. So Sergeant Slaughter became a big character. Then he was a mail-away toy. Then he came with his tank, which was pretty badass. He had like a one-man tank that he would ride around in. And then later, he gets his own goddamn subset called Slaughter's Marauders. So he gets his own subset of characters that match his specific design. It was like, I think the design was like a blue and then like a brown camo. That was his like brown. So like his color palette was blue, brown, green, and black. So all of these
Marauders, were they like a mercenary group?
They were G.I. Joes that were acting as. So I believe the Slaughter's Marauders, I remember because I actually collected that entire subset. So like Barbecue, who, if you remember, Barbecue was the fire guy that looked like kind of like a stormtrooper that came with an axe.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in that color thing, but he was the same character, same mold, same thing with Spirit. Spirit was a member of Slaughter's Marauders as well. I'm trying to remember. I can look that up real quick. Barbecue, Footloose, Lowlight, Mutt and Junkyard, Slaughter and Spirit. Those were the Slaughter's Marauders, right? Those are all like the good guy That's like a good guy faction.
Are Marauders ever the good guys? That seems like they're sending mixed messages.
ACAB includes Slaughter's Marauders.
Yeah.
Yeah. And their name is also Slaughter.
Yeah. This feels like the G.I. Joe team that was put together to suppress communism in Latin America or something.
You're not wrong. And it's actually funny because they do in the animated movie, he has three, like a three-man team of like his, you know, of whatever. And it was like Mercer, Red Dog, and Taurus, who were like these crazy unhinged guys. They got released, didn't make it into his Renegades, did not become Slaughter's Marauders. They got ousted. They got kicked out of the team.
Speaking of cool members of teams, Jeff, this seems like a relevant place because we're about halfway through the show. We have some cool people. They could be Jeff May's Marauders, I guess. Would that work? Nerd
could
Marauders?
Say Jeff's May Rotters.
I like that. Because I'm always trying to go for Jeff Maniacs. And you're like, no, that's not what Jeff May fans are called. Jeff May Rotters, though, I like it. They're maniacs.
We do.
For sure.
We have sponsors. And if you head on over to patreon.com/JeffMay, you can sponsor this show. You can sponsor shows like Jeff Has Cool Friends. Adam's not a cool friend. even though he's done the show twice. Very uncool.
Right.
One of the most listened to episodes too, like on the YouTube. And then I did some like podcast advice. He did that
about it,
which was good stuff. Yeah. People love Adam.
Not me though.
They do.
If you head on over to patreon.com/JeffMay, you can sponsor and produce this show. You can produce Jeff Has Cool Friends. You can produce both. You can produce this show and get stuff in the mail. There's a lot of great stuff at patreon.com/JeffMay. And Dre, do we have any sponsors up in this piece today?
We do have some producers, starting with the Enchanted Wandering Unpierced Left Nimple Cider served at room temperature. And is there an X at the end, Jeff, or are we just marking that we said it?
That means we said it, although I will question your pronunciation of the word nipple. Sounded like you said nimple, and I was like,
It's not nimple? That's not how you say it?
Should we start
doing that to like satisfy standards and practices? We're like, we didn't like on G.I. Joe. They're like, you're not allowed to say nipple. And they're like, what about nimple?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, all right, that's fair.
Yeah. Flick you, ice hole.
There you go. All right. Well, you know, Jeff has a lot of nipple talk over on his producers at Jeff Has Cool Friends.
That was going to be my other show title was Jeff Has Cool Nipple Talk.
Nimple talk. All right. We have Norm from Cheers. Now we have Bimmy and Jimmy out fighting crime. I'll give a apology. I should add an update. This is Landon. He does try and do an update per show. I forgot to ask him before this, but that is a callback to one of the greatest episodes of Nerd, Double Dragon the movie, a.k.a. Jeff Loses His Soul. Next up, MikeSlater.com, fucking up search engine results for the right-wing radio host that shares my name since 2007. And hopefully we're helping you out there, Mike Slater. All right, Jeff.
There it is. We'd like to shout out to, I'm going to start calling Yoda Old Grogu just to see what happens. Shout out to Burrito. Shout out to Ricky Cilantro. Shout out to Dan's Ninja Turtle Ooze.
That's a fun one, Dan.
And ooze on the show. And of course, shout out to Porcelain Jesus. If you want that, head on over to patreon.com/JeffMay. You can sponsor Nerd. You can sponsor Jeff Has Cool Friends. You can sponsor anything you want. You could stab Adam.
No, you
can't.
And
I will, and I apologize for not doing this on the script, but I will throw out two. We kind of do this. We do like the honorary producers, Jeff. I will definitely shout out Walker, who has been sending you stuff to break. We always appreciate that. Walker, the unofficial, I guess, producer of I Must Break You, which you can see on Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific time, right before, of course, you're heading over to You Don't Even Like Sports Live, which you can find on YouTube. Amazing host, Adam Todd Brown.
Boo.
And Kim Kroll is there most of the time. And then I'll also give a shout out to Kelly Stanaway, a.k.a. Exploding Ruins, who's just runes. Another ruins.
Runes.
Didn't I say runes?
You said ruins.
Like ruins?
Like we just blew up the Great Pyramids.
Aren't they like basically the same? Ruins, ruins, runes, runes?
Runes. Runes. And ruins.
Like Dune.
So we got nimples and ruins, all right? So nimple ruins, I guess, is what we're going for.
Ruin some nimples, everybody.
Well, Kelly, Exploding Ruins, you get to you might be like, please don't have me as an unofficial.
Please take me out of your show.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, shout out to those people. Yeah. And back to Jeff Mayrotters, I guess.
I would like to add, too, that there is a very important near miss of a character that we were supposed to have. And I don't know if you knew this, but the G.I. Joes were going to have a trainer. And that trainer was Rocky Balboa.
I was just going to say Rocky Balboa.
It was Rocky Balboa. Due to likeness rights, and I believe it was either Remco or Coleco, one of those companies like had the rights to producing Stallone's face and had the rights to like the Rocky franchise, so they couldn't do it, I believe. But there is a character that was going to be a counterpart for Cobra called Big Boa. And Big Boa is one of the coolest looking dudes I've ever seen. He is a massively muscular dude wearing like this S&M suspender scenario where it's like red and spiked out. And he wears this like futuristic kind of like Mortal Kombat Cyrax mask. And he's known as Big Boa. That was supposed to go up against Rocky Balboa. But he still made it in and is actually a fan favorite. So I think we can all agree that that is a very exciting thing that we never got.
The figure has a helmet. So do you think that came in last second where they're like, we don't have the likeness rights, put a helmet on him?
I think that they were most likely going to try to set up some kind of mystery connection between the two characters and to then maybe have them like bump into each other. Famously, they did that with Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, that, you know, they were enemies, and then in the comic book you find out that they're actually from the same ninja clan. Now technically this is a reskin, but in 1994, Adam Todd Brown, the Street Fighter II video game was incredibly popular. Did you ever play Street Fighter II?
Of course.
Yeah. Who was your main?
I didn't play it to that degree that I had a main. I was, by the time we hit the 90s, I was very poor. Like, I didn't have a gaming console of my own after regular NES, which is also why I never got into, like, Transformers. What am I? Rockefeller?
Yeah. That's an expensive toy line. That's for damn sure. So, Street Fighter II, they released a G.I. Joe set. It was an act of convenience and synergy at the same time. But what they also did was they released movie tie-in Street Fighter G.I. Joes, meaning on the actual box is him. There's a Jean-Claude Van Damme G.I. Joe.
Oh, no.
And technically a vague Raul Julia.
So, that's my favorite Raul Julia. Vague Raul Julia.
Well, their version of M. Bison doesn't really look like Raul Julia, but you can probably understand that they couldn't really get like a much of an accurate face mold of him because of, you know, being dead.
What do you mean?
Raul Julia died like right after Street Fighter.
What do you mean?
He died of pancreatic cancer. I believe it was pancreatic cancer.
They literally changed the stinger at the end. He was supposed to do a Frank Langella Skeletor at the end of the movie, and say, I'll be back. And they like, it's on the DVD release, but they pulled it from the theatrical release.
Yes. He looks at the camera and goes, I most likely will not be back, though. On account of, you know.
Yeah.
They should have done like Jimmy Stewart and American Tail 5 Goes West, Jeff. Like, the end of the movie, Raul Julia pops up.
I'm going to die.
And he just does like they had, you might know this, Adam, it's a former episode. Kim Kroll is actually on it. But the end of 5-0 Goes West, which hopefully you were too old for by the time it came out. I had a younger brother, so I went and saw it. A terrible movie. It's Jimmy Stewart's last movie. And literally the end of the movie, his character in the movie is just like, hey, 5-0, you know, life's got a lot of challenges, but, you know, I'm probably going to die soon. But, you know, you go out and live your life. And they have him say that. And that would have been hilarious if, like, M. Bison pops up at the end of Street Fighter.
It's
just
line.
Like, live, do the Jimmy Stewart speech I would, from 5-0 Goes West.
I would also like to add that when they were filming the I'll Be Back sequence, Raul Julia should have been like, I feel like we maybe shouldn't waste a day on filming this specific sequence. Because he knew he was dying.
or if they're paying him and it's more money for his family. You know, he was a good guy. Raul Julia, by all rights,
he was a great guy. Like a great I'm not guy. Saying that.
So,
I'm just like,
so he's just like, yeah, I'll get some more money for my family.
Like, imagine him like exhaustively getting out of his trailer and like hamming it up. I'll be back.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we really, I cannot stress enough how much we don't need to be doing this.
but he got an action figure that probably came out after he died too, which was awesome.
Yeah, vaguely. So going from there, Adam, I want to talk to you about stupid little subsets.
Let's do it.
Starting in 1987, they had a little subset called Battle Force 2000. Because remember when 2000 was the future?
Yeah.
And it was vaguely futuristic G.I. Joes that sucked. I don't think anybody remembers any of those characters. I can't recall pretty much any of them. I don't know if you can, but they tried like back ending characters in there. There was a character named DJ that looked like Black RoboCop. It was a very weird. They got weird. They got very weird on that one. They also had a G.I. Joe the movie run that was also like, you know, had the villains and then the heroes, the Slaughter's Renegades. 1988, we have Tiger Force. And Tiger Force are G.I. Joe characters that are repainted with a tiger stripe, yellow and black theme. Then they have Night Force, which is the same, but like an all like dark black and gray theme. So here's what they're doing is they're literally just reskinning like characters like Psych Out, for example, who was a character I never had because he was what? Blonde. Night Force was like a dark run. I think it was like a Toys R Us exclusive thing, whatever. No one really gave a shit about Night Force, but Tiger Force, people were like going crazy over. And then in 1989, they were like, oh, shit. We should probably have villains to have themes as well. And that's where we start to get Python Patrol, which are the snake version of Tiger Force for the bad guys. They had like a...
With apologies, Jeff, to cut in.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking of for modern day is there's Paw Patrol. It's a popular thing. But like with the Snake Patrol... Like the same, Python I'm thinking Patrol. The same show, Python Patrol. Are just you like Paw Patrol.
Are you thinking that because snakes. They both have the word patrol in there?
They both have
his 24-inch pythons being flexed out over here.
Yeah, you know, he went into the jungle with Arnold Schwarzenegger and fought aliens. I remember that.
Dre, I love that you're really killing it with word association right now.
Because it's also got the alliteration. So now I want like a graphic of Python Patrol that's just Paw Patrol. With snakes.
Okay, that I can fuck with. I'm sorry, I missed where you were going with this, and I thought I was going to have to be like, it's very good. You want the Paw Patrol aesthetic applied to the Python Patrol characters?
Yes, that would be okay. Awesome.
I'm in. This was also the year of Slaughter's Marauders. So this was the year that the Slaughter Marauders came in, and then they also did more Night Force characters, whatever.
And they still have like 4 or 5 years to go. That's kind of remarkable because it sounded like it sounded like they were grasping here when you're talking just reskinning. But they're still going.
Oh, you know, I actually forgot too that in 1988, because they like didn't recognize this as, but there was the Iron Grenadiers line. The Iron Grenadiers line was actually, and this is something, Adam, that you might be interested to know. Destro basically like overthrew Cobra Commander for a while.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and took over, and that's the gold plated head Destro. He came with like a hover foil. He had like a fucking sword as well as a gun.
I want a life size. I want a life size gold Destro in my home.
That's what you need.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Iron Grenadiers were a nice like villain version to go up against Tiger Force. Now it's going to start to get gimmicky, cheap, and desperate, which is...
Could you add the word to all of those? Because even for what you're saying, right? And it, by the way, in terms of like cutting corners, I think, I don't remember if on the initial run we talked this, but it's funny that Snake Eyes is one of the most popular characters Because literally, when they're making the first run, by the time they're going whole hog in 88, they've got a lot of money behind them. But when they come out in 82, it's like a big gamble. And they're like, okay, well, we don't know if we have enough supplies to paint all of these characters. And they're like, so should we cut back on each one? And they're like, nah. Cut back on one. So they basically just released the base figure as Snake Eyes, who's all black.
A palette-less figure, yeah.
And that's one of the most popular. And in fact, I was going to say, Jeff, I think you had the opportunity. You went to a 3-0 show recently, an amazing toy company. Listen to more. Jeff has cool friends to hear more about him. They had the, you were saying, Snake Eyes has the association. I just dropped the name of the other character. Storm Shadow. Shocker they're related, the two ninjas, right? Who would have figured? Yeah. But I think they weren't.
Snake Eyes wasn't a ninja at first.
Really?
But like retroactively, like when Adam bought Snake Eyes, he wasn't a ninja. He was a commando.
Yeah.
And when ninjas became hyper popular in the mid 80s, it wasn't hard for them to reskin and sort of retcon Snake Eyes' background to make him a ninja. Remember, Snake Eyes originally was a Vietnam vet who had fuel exploding in his face, and that's why he wore the mask when he was saving Scarlet. Then it's like, oh, also he was a Vietnam vet that was a ninja. How's that sound?
It does say on the back that he is looking at the original card. Again, yojo.com, amazing resource. But he is highly proficient in karate, kung fu, and jujitsu.
Sure.
So it does make sense. It, like you're saying, like when they're like, who do we have that can be a ninja? You're like, the character dressed in all black that's shrouded that's already a martial arts expert.
How about this pre-ninja we designed? How about that? But yeah, so he ended up, and that's actually why Snake Eyes is an interesting character in the G.I. Joe lore, where like you see Storm Shadow, he doesn't run around with a fucking Uzi. Snake Eyes does. So like they incorporate those together to make Snake Eyes this interesting mix of both the mystical as well as the sort of, you know, like technological weapons guy. Like he uses small weapons as well, whereas Storm Shadow does not. Now, here's where it's going to get real fun, because in 1990, we get Sky Patrol.
I was going to say you could do like Paw Patrol, but with the skies.
I will kick you in the back.
I think he's on to something.
Sky Patrol, which will then sort of kind of be reskinned as Air Commandos, where what if G.I. Joes were on tights?
It also sounds like the band Snow Patrol.
Yeah, that actually is where Snow Patrol got their name. So that makes sense.
I don't care.
I would love to not correct that and just let it exist out there in the ether. And Sonic Fighters, which just had, they made sounds. They had backpacks that made sounds.
That's dumb.
Adam, you are 100% correct. They had huge backpacks. Like the backpack was most of its body size.
Was this due to like they needed them to have the batteries to be able to make the noise because battery technology was that bad back then?
1990 loved putting backpacks that had voices and sounds on characters. Marvel did it. Everyone did it. So you had Sky Patrol and Sonic Fighters in 1990. In 1991, now we're going to make a shift in both the cartoon as well, because Marvel has lost the license to create the cartoon, and it goes over to a company named Deke. Deke made the other cartoons in the 80s. And my brother and I loved, because you'd see in the beginning of a show, you'd see the logo would come up, and then you'd hear a kid go, Deke. And we were like, Dick. The answer is Dick. You're saying Dick.
Yeah.
We used to get a real laugh about that. There are certain companies that exist in people's memories where they like get this like if I just went to her and I went, sit, Ubu, sit.
Ah, good dog.
See, immediately you get that. Now, you probably hadn't thought about Ubu Productions in forever, but you know that the shows that were made around that time would always have that. And yeah. Deke had the same thing. Marvel had the same thing. When Marvel Productions would happen, you'd see the Marvel Entertainment come down, and then like this Spider-Man animatic would come over it. And it looked awesome, by the way, but they lost it. And then so It's the 90s. We're moving into the 90s. We're heading to the 90s, living in the wild, wild west.
Skate, wow. Baby.
And so now you start seeing like the Eco Warriors.
Lame.
1991, we have Eco Warriors, Supersonic Warriors, Talking Battle Commanders, so you can get a stalker with a giant backpack where he goes, blitz him, blitz him.
Blitz him.
Blitz him.
What's that mean? Everyone chain yourself to a tree?
I guess that's what blitz him means when you're stalker. Air Commandos and something known as Battle Copters. You can figure that one out. You don't need me to describe that. In 1992, time to get even more on it, this is the most weird snapshot of 1992 ever. The two sets are the DEF, which is the Drug Enforcement Force. It was like a D.A.R.E. program as G.I. Joe characters. And there is a character in the DEF called, I believe his name is like the Headman or something like that. And you really have to see what he looks like. And if you could, by any chance, find a way to put that in the chat, Dre, while I'm talking, the best way I could describe Headman is like, what if the Hamburglar got into meth? Did you find it, Dre?
What is this?
I can find it and I can give it
to you. Oh, yeah.
What the hell is this?
Did you see him?
That's strange.
This guy,
what?
He looks like, I don't know. He looks like a bad music video villain, or yeah. He's got like a domino mask on. You know, who he looks like Robert Patrick from Double Dragon with a hat on. He's got like a gold striped suit jacket.
Yeah, he looks like Zorro if Zorro had an STD instead of a sword.
Yeah, that's how he takes out his enemies.
Yeah. What is now, is he riding something?
That is a, so around this time, they're also going to start doing, triggered weapons.
Oh yeah. Geared up.
So now on top of that too, I'm also going to add, at least with the Eco Warriors, you got a character named Cesspool. And Cesspool was basically Two-Face. He got toxic wasted. He at least looked cool. The Headman does not. But the other one, the other set we had is Ninja Force. Obviously. These are all of, they created a bunch of ninja characters. The bad guys got like Slice and Dice. Storm Shadow was in there. Snake Eyes. I don't think Snake Eyes was in. Oh, yeah. He had a late Ninja Force run.
Sorry, I've got to go back to Headman.
Okay, I mean, we got to spend the rest of the day talking about Headman.
The cards on the back make these even more incredible. Again, for the millionth time, we're not getting sponsored, but JoJo is just great because they even have it in flat text because I don't have to squint. So his motto, I am above the law. I rule this block. I rule this city.
Hell yeah, it's the like Headman, Carbito's way.
The Headman, all caps, started out mugging old ladies for their social security checks, on to robbing convenience stores, then learned the ropes about drug dealing while serving time in the state penitentiary. A hardened criminal, if ever there was one, Headman, not capped anymore, so it's all regular case, wouldn't think twice about annihilating anything or anyone who gets in his way. Nothing is sacred to him, nothing. A truly evil villain with a fixation on order and control, he created a drug empire based upon paramilitary standards with strict discipline and a rigid chain of command. The result was an organization that quickly devoured its competition and now threatens to spread its addictive poison throughout the entire world. There is so much in that backstory that we didn't even touch in that card. That was whoever wrote that card, you are amazing. Because somehow he went from like a mugger.
Probably Larry Hama.
This is ridiculous. This is amazing.
That was the, like, how 1992 is that? Honestly.
That's, yeah. I don't like that character. It feels like almost like vaguely racist, kind of.
I mean, he's a white guy.
I don't care. Like, I feel, I don't care.
It's really War on Drugsy.
Yeah. I don't
which
like
which I guess is inherently racist, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't, you can claim he's white, but like the figure, they're definitely going with like some Latin.
Yeah,
Latin features.
No, he's blonde. I believe he's very blonde too.
Maybe like,
he's
under,
a white blonde. He has a blonde ponytail. If you
then
want,
why,
them
then
just
why is
how,
his goatee black?
Why was Double Dragon's version of Robert Patrick have blonde hair with a black goatee? That happens, man. Bad guys have blonde hair with black goatees. I do not.
And Robert Patrick's name was Shuko in that. We're like, listen, the blonde haired black goatee characters, yes, they can't be racist.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in 1993, we had the Battle Corps, and what the Battle Corps were was essentially take all of the key characters that you know and love throughout the history of G.I. Joe and give them weapons that will shoot into your child's eye or mouth. They had rocket launchers that would fire. They were awesome.
Can I ask a question? Did like stuff get changed? Because I remember notoriously, and this will come up in a future season, the Boba Fett figure in Star Wars had a jetpack with a thing, and they basically didn't release it because of quality control, saying
these rockets
choke
were
on it.
Very long.
Oh, so they can choke on a
harder
bigger
to, harder to swallow. Yeah. The problem with the Boba Fett missile launcher wasn't that the kids would choke on it, so the kids would swallow it. Like swallowing it was actually the bigger problem than the act. I mean, it's a choking hazard, sure. And these are certainly a choking hazard. But the Battle Corps versions of whatever, they were just shooting like big ass fucking rockets, like big, massive rockets. And I remember, I don't remember if it was in this run or a later run, but there's like a Destro that had like a, basically a mine launcher that you would carry and walk and shoot into it. And that was just fucking awesome, man. Just so cool.
Don't you feel bad you missed that, Adam? Like you quit 10 years in front of this. You could have stuck around.
I bought a gold Destro while we were recording.
Did you actually buy a gold headed Destro?
Yeah. I would send a screenshot if I knew how to send screenshots on Zoom. But
it's all good. That's fucking awesome. Did he come with a little hover thing at all, or complete, or just the figure?
No, it's still in the packaging and everything.
Oh, hell yeah. Destro was a pre-version of the Battle Corps, the Battle Force or whatever. But he did have this thing, and apparently you weren't supposed to put it on his arm, but I would always find a way to balance him so that he would hold this like giant mine launcher in his hand and just shoot mines in G.I. Joe's faces, which that can't be. That's a pretty, pretty brutal way to obliterate your enemy. Shoot like a claymore mine, like throw a mine at their face. So 1993, you have the Battle Corps, right? But you also have Dino Hunters, Mega Marines, Star Brigade, and Street Fighter II. Street Fighter II, the original video game connected run.
Wow.
1994 is going to see the death of a real American hero with the Shadow Ninjas, which were basically like Ninja Force, but they had like kind of like more like translucent plastic. So they would like blend into their surroundings more. It's also important to note that the Ninja Force characters were all like super brightly colored, which sort of does defeat the purpose of being a ninja. That they all wore like bright yellows and neon pinks and shit.
Holy cow. I got to throw this out because as cool as the Ninja Force sounds, the Iron Grenades anniversary leader Deathstroke gold head that Adam got, and that was only 15. Sorry to blow your spot out. That was only 15.
Yeah, it was $15.
Holy cow. All right. Well, you know, use a checkout code at checkout. Use code nerd for 1% off or something. But what I was going to throw out is like, this is awesome. And I hope you put it on your Instagram. Again, you should follow Adam on Instagram. There's lots of cool stuff there. What's your handle there? Is it just, I forget. Is it
just my name at Adam Todd Brown, but it's Todd with 1D.
Yep.
All my family could afford.
Oh,
it's a joke. Oh. Early Hills. Now
Adam's been chasing the D ever since.
What? Destro. Yeah. And I just got one.
Dickstro.
Oh, damn.
Gold-plated dick. Sorry.
Hey, we don't know, right? Like, we don't see underneath the pants, so could be. Yeah. I mean, you're going to spend the money to gold plate your head, like, while you're in there, save some money, right?
Yes. Hell yeah. Now, there have since been different versions of G.I. Joe to make an attempt in 1995. They tried G.I. Joe Extreme, and you'll never guess how poorly that did. The thing is that G.I. Joe has been such an important property that it dipped, but it never fully left. And they did re-releases often. And G.I. Joe is actually still, you can go to Target right now and find these characters in a larger scale that I believe they call G.I. Joe Classified is the ones you can get now. Cinematically, we have had four G.I. Joe movies. One never made it to theaters. It's the animated movie. The problem with that was that the Transformers and My Little Ponies movies tanked. So G.I. Joe then went to direct to television as a four-issue miniseries, I believe. A four-episode miniseries. Then, in the 2000s, we get G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Adam, your favorite movie, yes?
It was fine.
2009?
Yeah.
Sort of like, they were like, what if G.I. Joe was in The Phantom Menace?
Yeah, I saw.
People did not like that one. People really hated it.
Yeah.
4 years later, we get a sequel that also kind of serves as a soft reboot in G.I. Joe Retaliation. The first G.I. Joe, the mainly we know Channing Tatum, that he did not want to do that movie. He hated it. Begged for his character to die, and his best friend was directing Retaliation, and he did him a favor and, spoiler alert, kills him in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
And interesting, Jeff, did you ever get a chance to tell this director in person how much you liked his movie?
Yes. So, funny story. I was an Uber driver, and I used to pick people up all the time. And sometimes you pick people up that are famous directors leaving other famous directors' Christmas parties. And I picked up John Chu. And he was like, oh, I'm a film director. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I would love to support. Like, what do you have that came out? And he's like, the last movie I did was this movie called G.I. Joe Retaliation. And I was like, can I say something real quick? And he's like, sure. And I was like, I really like how the mountain scene, you basically took the energy, the spiritual energy of G.I. Joe number 21, and you converted it into a film. And I really appreciated that because 21 is like a famous silent issue. And he's like, holy shit, really? Like, he couldn't fathom that I liked that movie because it's not well received, but I still think it's probably one of the best nostalgic cartoon property to cinematic film that you could possibly see. And then most recently, the Snake Eyes movie, G.I. Joe Origins Snake Eyes, which Snake Eyes was originally Ray Parks. Snake Eyes, the character, has always been just like a scarred up blonde dude. And Ray Park was great, even though in the first movie they gave him rubber lips. And in this one, they recast him as Henry Golding, who I believe is an Asian American actor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was in Crazy Rich Asians, right?
He was. He played Snake Eyes in Crazy Rich Asians. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like a real left turn because she's like, I'm dating this like rich guy. And they're like, who is it? And he's like, I didn't tell you my family is at Cobra Commander. That's where all the money comes from. That'd have been an interesting movie. Anyway, but he was born in Malaysia, just to answer your question. Okay. So, yep, full Asian, wasn't Crazy Rich Asians, playing Snake Eyes, bizarre movie.
And that movie also bombed. Every G.I. Joe film that has ever been made was relatively disappointing at the box office. Not necessarily a bomb, but definitely not what they were hoping after the money they made off of Transformers films, which is a good example of sometimes people just want to see fucking robots smashing into each other. Adam.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe. Uh-huh. Looking back at it, you love it. Yeah. Who was your favorite? Like, what were your favorite parts of this toy line? Like, what was the shit that you were like, this is my favorite. This is my guy. Was it Destro?
It was, again, I really leaned toward the villains. I liked how they looked. I liked Cobra Commander. I liked Destro. But Snake Eyes was also one of my favorites on the narc side of things. But yeah, I'm with you. I tended to like the ones that looked most like the military the least. Because yeah. It's like that's everywhere. Like I can see that anywhere, but how many people are running around with a silver mask? Like, was that practical? He couldn't have, there's no other mask options. Like I could have watched a movie about how they came up with that mask.
That mask, yeah.
For him.
I think they do that in Rise of Cobra, he looks like a real weirdo. They actually fix it in Retaliation. The design of the characters in Retaliation is actually like awesome. Like G.I. Joe Retaliation is, in my opinion, good. And people look at me like I'm crazy about that, but fuck them.
For what it's worth, that one was almost successful. So
made about $140 million, right?
So G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, $175 million budget. Holy cow, what a swing. Jeez. 302 worldwide. Jeff brings this up all the time. One, if you're looking international, so domestic, it only makes $150 million. So worldwide, it's going to make less money because they take a bigger margin. To Jeff's point, in movies, though, the reason they're probably okay with that is they're trying to sell a toy line. So they're like, if we can almost make our money back on the movie, maybe get some money back in DVD sales. That's end of DVD era. We're good. So they try again, but they give it a smaller budget. G.I. Joe Retaliation, $140 million. That one does good. $375 million worldwide. Still doesn't do great domestically. $122 million. And then just they wait 8 years for G.I. Joe Origins on Snake Eyes.
They want people to forget about the run that they had.
Yeah. And Snake Eyes, though, just face in the dirt, $88 million budget, 34 worldwide, $6 million internationally. So like,
when was that released?
That was 2021. So that could be, I mean, you know, I don't know.
So it's important to note that because
middle of COVID,
you mentioned that like box office numbers during the COVID era mean nothing to me. Like, I know that that's like unfair to say, like, especially when, you know, films do well, like that's awesome. But at the same time, I'm like, doesn't count. Yeah. So like, I'm sure it would have crested past 100 million if people weren't afraid they'd die to see Snake Eyes. But like, it's really not. Like, I remember the last movie I saw, I bookended like the major parts of the pandemic with Bloodshot and Mortal Kombat. Like that was like, I saw Bloodshot right when they were like, we think we're going to start locking shit down. And I ended up seeing that with David Bell. And I remember we were leaving and there were like a lot of families at Dave and Buster's. And we were like, well, that doesn't seem good at all that that's happening.
Yeah.
Like we were already nervous going there. And then the first movie I saw in theaters at the end of the pandemic, which is totally not happening anymore, people don't get sick anymore, was Mortal Kombat.
I was going to say, it's a classic to just give you a shout out, Adam, because you're, you know, kind of know everything ahead of time, or you break a lot of stuff on your show ahead of time. And it sucks because you're like, I really hope he's not right. And then you're right. And it sucks. And I do remember you were ahead of the COVID stuff. You were talking it like, are people not taking it seriously enough? That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. COVID was great. Everything about it was so much. Loved it.
The only last thing I wanted to do on the toys, because by the way, one other wind down. And sorry, Adam, I know we went into the geeky like movie grosses and left you out a little on the end there. Thanks for letting me ramble. But
no problem.
But the end of like G.I. Joe, another funny thing that'll come up later is that they bought Kenner. Hasbro bought Kenner. And so now they have like two different toy lines to look after. And they're like, should we go with Star Wars or should we go with G.I. Joe? That's starting to falter. So that kind of.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is always going to make money.
Yeah.
Like Star Wars is the golden goose of merchandising. It's very funny to me. Hasbro's still pushing G.I. Joe. I don't know if you guys saw the Rise of the Beasts or whatever Transformers movie, but there was like a little teaser that they introduced the G.I. Joe was coming. So like they're still going to push G.I. Joe. There was a while that they're trying to make like a Hasbro cinematic universe and bring in like the Visionaries and Mask. You guys ever play with Mask?
No.
Where it's like this car flies. It has wings now. real stupid ass shit.
You should, Adam, in my face, Jeff could just be making this up. You should keep going and see how wild you get.
No, I got no need to. I can tell you everything if you want.
Nice.
I'll just Hasbro loves G.I. Joe because G.I. Joe saved Hasbro. And so they're always going to try to push it. The IP is interesting. It got to us, and it got to our nostalgia in such a way that Adam bought fucking Destro while we were talking.
I didn't know there was a gold one.
Now you know.
I was actually
knowing it's half the battle.
I was actually reading his card while you were talking.
What's the card say?
I'm not going to read all that. Come on.
Just give me the gist.
Well, I mean, his ancestors started their family fortune by selling arms to both sides of the British Civil War. So everyone knew that, though. One was caught in the act by Cromwell's men and was made to wear an uncomfortable steel mask. They had to punish him, but they still wanted his weapons. Since that time,
what?
The lairds of the Destro clan have worn the mask with pride and passed it down to succeeding generations. Lairds? Is that like a word
Scottish.
For offspring? I don't like that.
That's some Scottish shit.
Say it right, Destro. I'm going to cancel this order.
I know you love fan theories, Jeff, but could we make Deathstro like a Highlander now? From Scotland? They're like he's passed
he's
down
immortal.
The mask.
He actually died in the beginning of G.I. Joe Retaliation.
But they're saying they've passed down the mask generation to generation. What a better way.
So he's more like Zorro.
But I'm saying if you were trying to hide you were an immortal, what better way than to just wear a gold plated mask or silver plated mask and say you were honoring your ancestors? Deathstro, immortal.
That would have to be a consistent ass exercise routine for every member that takes that mantle, that you have to have the same body as that dude forever.
No, I'm saying he's immortal. It's just the same dude. Oh. And every.
Yeah, that could be why he has a golden head.
I would also like to mention there apparently is a version of the Destro with the gold head that people call the Pimp Daddy version. And it, that one was like $60 and no thank you. But
well, what's it? What's the Pimp Daddy version look like?
It looks like he's wearing pimp gear. Just Google Destro Pimp Daddy.
I'm already looking up Pimp Daddy. Oh, yeah, it's the anniversary one.
Yeah. Well, the one I got is too, but it's a different.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's where he's got like the.
He's got like a big ass gold chain on. Yeah. In like leopard print.
Yeah. They did the G.I. Joe Collectors Club, which those toys are actually very valuable now. So like G.I. Joe is still weirdly strong. And sort of to circle it back to how we started, because I know we got to get this thing going. It's very fascinating to me that this started as a reboot of a dead doll line, excuse me, action figures, that nobody gives a shit about that G.I. Joe. Like aside from a Kung Fu Grip reference, nobody cares about original G.I. Joe. Everybody who did, they're dead. They're all dead. Meanwhile, a real American hero starting that reboot in 1980, getting the toys out with the comic book and the cartoon, that has sunken its hooks into our culture for the last 42 years.
Dear God.
Like G.I. Joe and I are like pretty much the same age.
There's funny like two lines there, Jeff. So when we're talking G.I. Joe versus Lego, 1982 Times Person of the Year was the computer. I was born in 82. And so we're saying like different things. Like if you go G.I. Joe versus Lego, like I was born in the year of the computer. I'm like computers. And you're like, you were born around the same time. You're like G.I. Joe's. So both sides of the coin.
Adam, what do you prefer, computers or G.I. Joe?
Computers, definitely. They're great. I make my living on them.
That's fair. But what if you could make your living off of Destro? That would be cool too, right?
That would be cool too.
Why don't you become an arms dealer?
I'd probably rather do that. Yeah, I would. I regret not getting into selling guns after cracked folded. I mean, it took another year for it to fold, but let's be honest. Yeah, I regret not getting into weapons.
Yeah, I regret you not getting into weapons too.
Or I should have joined the military.
Oh,
I almost did. And then 9/11 happened. And I was like, well, thank God I didn't join the military because I am a coward.
Yikes.
And I don't even know ninjutsu. So, like, how good would I even be in the military?
Exactly.
Well, gentlemen, Adam Todd Brown, thank you so much for talking about G.I. Joe with us. Any last thoughts on G.I. Joe?
No. I mean, it's a thing that I have nostalgia for it because it's a thing I was way into as a kid. But yeah, I eventually moved on to collecting other stuff that I've since circled back to collecting now. And I just bought a Destro. So here we go.
You know, it's funny. We all established that I am a gift person. I like giving gifts. I actually have something for you, Adam, that I picked up the other day that I was just like, well, Adam has to have this. But however, I've learned, I got you that refrigerator Perry G.I. Joe. I know to try to avoid throwing too many toys at you because I know they take up space. I've gotten you a couple things. I got you like a prototype Michael Jordan toy.
Yeah.
It's like a weird mold of Michael Jordan for like kind of like a big head goofy looking thing. But like I always think about, I connect Adam with G.I. Joe. Whenever like a real American hero comes up, for some reason, Adam, you are like ingrained in that to me because of your backstory with it. So I'm really glad you got to join us, even though I don't like you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, even though I hate you. It was great getting to talk to Dre.
As we do, I'll shout this out. So lots of plugs and I'll let you get to those in a sec. But the one, like I said, you don't even like Sports Live on Wednesday is absolutely great because it's a running theme joke. You even named a show at this point where you don't even like sports. That's what started a lot of the you don't even like stuff. Yeah. And the reality is, as one of the biggest sports geeks out there, I cannot bring myself to say that joke. Shout out to friend of the show, John Ryman, where he didn't understand. He was like trying to make the you don't even like sports joke about you two. And I was like, hey, sorry, I can't make this joke. They're too good at sports. And he's like, are you mad at me? And I'm like, I'm not mad. I get it's a joke, but if like the joke was like Michael Jordan can't dunk, I'd be like, I get it.
Michael Jordan can't dunk.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just like, I can't say it. You two are great. So you don't even like Sports Live. I love last call out you even did. You just said the Dre show with Nerd Alvarez is a joke, which I absolutely love. That's fun stuff. But Adam, you don't even like sports. The network everywhere. Patreon. I think you prefer Supercast. I was going to look at getting the lifetime membership at some point just to like get converted over. It's just, you know, one more membership, but other stuff about that, that you'd like to do about your network, et cetera.
My podcasts are at all the places. You don't even like this show. You don't even like sports. You don't even like this band. Pretty Scary, Conspiracy the Show. I do a bunch of podcasts and contrary to some belief, apparently they are everywhere. You can just get them anywhere. Someone left a comment on my YouTube and reprimanded me for not putting my podcast somewhere accessible. It's like, you mean Spotify, iTunes, any of that? You can just go.
I'll throw this out. You're nicer than most because, as an example, most people that have a huge podcast bank, it's like 500 to 1,000. It starts truncating. Like the Libsyn I pay for truncates at 100 for another show I do. You will sub-release. So, for instance, you did a show called Best Bad Movie Ever at one point.
Yeah.
And even did an episode on like He-Man, Master of the Universe with Dave Bell and Tom Ryman. And I think Jeff was on it as well. And like, that's findable as like a sub episode. So it's like, you don't even have to search through things and then go, oh, is this going to get cut off because it's over 500? You have done that. So if there's a show Adam has done, just use Google. It's there. I promise you.
You'll find it.
We're there, baby.
You'll find it.
Adam Todd Brown on Instagram because you want like the followers up there. You're on YouTube as well. You don't even like sports. Look for that because it's You Don't Even Like Sports Live out there. Do you want to promote your eBay store as well? I keep holding this up, but Caitlin Clark rookie cards, that's good stuff. But if you don't want to promote that, you can look for that as well.
I mean,
I think you have a link in your store.
If you're trying to get yourself an OJ Simpson auto on this dark day in American history, youdontshow.link/cards. You can buy cards that I list on eBay.
Love it. And you've got good stuff up there. eBay alerts me when you get new stuff. I've got most of what I need, but occasionally I have stuff out there that I'm like, maybe. So yeah.
Oh, it doesn't alert you when I list every single thing, I hope.
No, like eBay will do like the, like, hey, your favorite sellers. If you're just someone active on eBay, it'll be like, hey, your favorite sellers have got new stuff. You might want to check them out, because that's eBay's business model. They want you to buy stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
All right.
I listed Jeff. That. Coincidentally, before we jump to that, I just got a push notification because I was making sure all my schedule stuff was lined up for like promotion and everything like that. Secret Galaxy, I got a push notification as we were, like, as you were asking me, saying the failure of G.I. Joe Sigma 6. So like Secret Galaxy, Dan Larson still making G.I. Joe content that people are going to love. So definitely check that out. Friend of the show, Dan Larson. Now, from here, you're here. You're listening on either on whatever version of my network you are. Thank you. Whether you're listening for free or on patreon.com/JeffMay, I appreciate you listening. If you're listening for free, all I ask is you give a nice review, hit subscribe, do the nice things. They're all fucking free. Just do those. You can also hear me on a lot of Adam's stuff. So go over to his network and check that out. And I also do Tom and Jeff Watch Batman on Gamefully Unemployed. If you want to check out the Patreon, and if you're in a position to help me out, I really would appreciate it. Patreon.com/JeffMay. Early access to this show, early access to Jeff Has Cool Friends. You can get exclusives like Ugg Fine with Kim Kroll. I do the swear cuts, where we cut all of the cursing out of the free Jeff Has Cool Friends episodes, and I put them into just one file on Patreon. People really seem to like that. I also put stuff away in the mail, both from when I open cards with Adam Todd Brown on You Don't Even Like Sports
Cards.
As well as the stuff that I open on I Must Break You, which is every Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, right before You Don't Even Like Sports. Mint on Cards, second Friday of every month. Blast from the Past on beautiful Magnolia in Burbank, California. Last month, we had Adam Todd Brown and Kim Kroll from You Don't Even Like Sports live. They were on the show. That's exciting.
Whee!
Remember how good that was when we were on the show last week, Adam?
Yeah, I killed. It was great.
So I was going to say, as a time, I'm gonna hop in my time machine, Jeff, and go back in time to ask past Jeff, like, if you have flyers that you can sign from that show, future me would absolutely love that, if that's possible. But I'll have to see if my time machine can work to ask that, if I'm trying to keep kayfabe. Anyway, I'll
say this. If we have enough left after the show, I will absolutely have sent you one.
Perfect. I appreciate that. All right. I'll just end out and just say you can find me most places on the internet as Nerd Numbers, the other podcast I have, the Box Score Geek Show with Brian Foster. But all of what Jeff said, patreon.com/JeffMay. If you like support, that means more of this stuff. You can be a producer of this show. And really, we'll shout out Jeff and Adam Breaking Cards. One of my favorite things, they figured out how to maybe do it remote. So we might see more of that on either Hey There, Jeffro on YouTube, or You Don't Even Like, or it's a. Like you don't sports. Even sports, I think is what it's called.
You
on
don't sports.
You don't sports. Sport. Yeah, you don't sports on YouTube. Check that out. All right. I think I got us in just right under the minute. I think that's everything, guys. We can just say bye and sign off.
Adam's a bad person. Bye.
Bye and sign off.
Adam's a great person. Bye.
Fuck you, Jeff.
Thanks for listening to Nerd. If you want to help keep the podcast growing, it's definitely worth your while to head over to patreon.com/JeffMay. And also, you'll get bonuses and early access to cool stuff. Cool stuff like videos of Jeff showing off awesome collectibles and doing pack-breaking videos. It'd be worth your while to check out Jeff May's YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@HeyThereJeffro. That's spelled J-E-F-F-R-O. And shocker, that is also his Twitter and Instagram account as well. So follow Jeff everywhere. You can find me most places on the internet as @NerdNumbers. Also, shout out to Chris Haugen for the outro theme of Pure Magic. Thanks so much, and we'll be back with another nerdy subject soon.